Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We've been looking at the various German terms over the past few days. Schöpfung is the term for creation. Creation is identical to universal consciousness. It is the universe's internal and external body. Schöpfung is German for creation. And the universe that we live in has a relatively young universal consciousness. It is in the first stage of its evolution. Universes go through something like 10 to the 64th power stages of evolution. We have a young universal consciousness, so we have what's called a material belt. There are seven belts in our universe, and they counter-rotate amongst each other. The fourth belt is where all the stars and the galaxies and the universe resides. The universe that we live in is the material manifestation of the wisdom of creation. In other words, this superintelligence called creation built our universe. And everything which exists in our universe is a manifestation of the power of the thoughts of this universal consciousness and its idea of love. The physical universe exists in the material belt, which is, again, the fourth of seven belts. This universal consciousness has an infinite and effective love. And the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the creational love. There are something called creational natural laws. And the first is the law of love. Love is the highest principle in creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. And this is an effective love, which is a wisdom-conditioned love. Very stable, it's based on observation, it's based on respect and reverence. There is a kind of affective love, which is a love that is romantic. It's really unstable. In fact, it turns into hatred at times. This is not a healthy love, but it's the love that we focus on. Unfortunately, here on the earth, it's the kind of love that songs are written about and stories are written about in romance novels and things like that. There is a second creational natural law called the law of striving, which is the fundamental law of all evolution. If you don't strive, then you have no life and you have no happiness. Striving is critical to maintain happiness in life. Striving is work. And let me read from the book called The Way to Live, The Art zu Leben, what we mean when we say striving. For that striving requires an expenditure of effort and must be achieved through hard work. That striving is not simply dropped into one's lap, and that again and again there are circumstances which work against the striving. Therefore, one's striving cannot be constantly and really gratified, because there are multifarious powers that work against the striving. And this is, I'm back on an earlier page. It says, therefore, delectation, harmony, happiness, as well as everything positive, as well as grief and everything negative, are in the end only the revelation of how pronounced striving is in a life form. Depending on the degree of the strength of the striving of any single vision, it will assert itself in the world, prevail, or will fall, shatter, waste away, come to an end, and vanish. So that's how important the law of striving is. It's the key to your happiness. It's the fundamental law of all evolution. The third creational natural law is the law of harmony. And the law of harmony deals with the bipolar structure composition of everything that exists. And it also talks about the fact that our thinking should be neutral, positive. And we've read in the book, The Might of Thoughts, that if negative thoughts are maintained in this way, regardless of whether it is knowingly or unknowingly, then negative effects also follow. So if your thoughts become negative, you then have negative effects pop up in the circumstances of your life. However, if the thoughts are healthy and thereby neutral, positive, equalized, then the effect also corresponds to that. So if you have neutral positive thinking, you'll have good circumstances in your life. However, there is also room in the neutral positive equalized thinking for negative inclusions, which should not simply be suppressed, but rather be processed in a neutral positive way in order to achieve an effective equalization. So it's not that we're just suppressing the negative thoughts, but we're thinking about them in such a way that they can be turned into neutral thoughts. Therefore, one must not think in only purely positive or purely negative form, rather precisely in a neutral positive equalized form with the same amount of both parts. Now here's an interesting thing about sorrow and happiness. Joy and sorrow live very close together, just as day and night, or rainy weather and sunshine. Thus, in the life of the human being, joys follow sorrow, always alternating according to the form of thinking which allows its power and might to prevail in negative or positive forms. So the law of love tells us we need to have a love that's based on reverence and wisdom. The law of striving tells us we need to continue to work consistently and be focused in our work. The law of harmony tells us we need to be neutral, positive in our thinking. And then the law of reincarnation tells us that we are on a cycle that involves physical lifetime and then death. And then physical lifetime again, and then death. And then physical lifetime again, and death. And this goes on for 40 to 60 million years in the first five stages of human evolution. The extraterrestrial humans that had contact with Billy were in the fifth stage of evolution, most of them, meaning that their next stage of evolution will be a half physical and a half spiritual state. So they're at a point of evolution now where they're really not compatible with Earth human beings in terms of our thoughts. Our thought forms are very primitive and very unstable and dangerous for them. So they don't even want to be around us. The thoughts are related to your something called the material consciousness and your spirit form is called the Geist form. And your spirit form resides in the middle of the brain in an area called the superior colliculus. And the spirit form is the part of us that never dies. Therefore, it remains after death. The spirit is a minute part piece of the creation. And it animates the physical body. It causes the heart of the fetus to beat. And the spirit comes into the body of the fetus 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. Your spirit form, your Geist form, is no larger than a needle point. its energy is incredible. And it spreads this energy evenly over all parts of your body, on the inside and outside. When you die, the spirit form leaves the body, and so does your consciousness. But the spirit energy stays in the body for about 3 hours. And the spirit energy finally will be absorbed by nature in the course of 3 hours. And if you can get organs during that 3 hours, they'll be viable. And that's when organ donation can occur. Billy's third extraterrestrial contact was a woman named Semyase, and his 10th contact with her occurred on March 26, 1975 at about 3:20 p.m. She was 344 years old when she landed her ship near Schmidrücki, Switzerland, and she would step out of her craft. She was a young, pretty woman, blue eyes and light blonde hair. And she would come over and sit down beside Billy, and they would have these long conversations. And Contact Report 10 dealt with the spiritual teachings very much. However, in 1977, which was 2 years later, Semyase suffered a life-threatening accident in the Semyase Silver Star Center when I think it was Jacobus who walked in. And Semyase fell and hit her head on a table. She was transported back to her ship and eventually rescued. But in the 2 years that Billy had to talk with her, he learned very much. And one of the things she said about the human spirit is that the human bears a spirit that does not die nor sleep during its deepest sleep. It records all thoughts and motions and informs the human whether his thoughts are correct or false if he's learned to pay attention. And I was thinking about that today. And the creation doesn't function like Heavenly Father, as it's told us in our religions. But we do have the spirit form, which will tell us if our thinking is right or wrong, if we can be subtle enough to pay attention to it. And a lot of times, if you have a thought that isn't correct, you'll have an associated feeling with that thought that will be a little unpleasant. So remember, your feelings grow out of your thoughts, which is different than your emotions. Your emotions kind of erupt uncontrollably many times. But if you'll pay attention to your feelings, that will help you understand if your thinking is right or wrong. Now, the spirit is created by the universal consciousness in order to help it evolve to a higher level. So after you reincarnate for 40 to 60 million years, and then you go into a half physical, half spiritual stage, which lasts 20 to 30 million years, then you'll go into, you'll lose the need for a physical body completely at the seventh stage of evolution, and then you'll go into what's called the spiritual planes. You'll be in the spiritual planes for about 2.9 billion years. And in those spiritual planes, there's another kind of evolution that takes place. The first spiritual plane is called Arahat Athrasada, and that might be a good thing to put in my terminology page. So we have a long road of evolution that involves many, many lifetimes. And it's both, I guess, both good and bad, depending on how you look at it. There is something that controls the thoughts and the feelings of this spiritual consciousness, and that's called the Gemüt. In the German, the Gemüt is the spiritual counterpart to the psyche. The Gemüt is our connection also with the universal consciousness. Now, the material consciousness, you could call your personality, you could call it your conscious, your subconscious, your unconscious mind. It's the part of your thinking that is creative. It's only the material consciousness that does inventions, that writes books, and so forth. Your material consciousness handles all your decision making, all your consideration, and all your deliberations. And the spiritual consciousness at our current point of evolution doesn't handle those kinds of things. So it's focused just on impulsing the material consciousness. It's focused on kind of recording everything that happens. It's eventually going to become our whole consciousness, but only after we've gone through all these evolutionary steps. So when you die, your material consciousness is not working in the spirit realm for the first five stages of evolution. So, you know, people say, well, you know, I don't want to reincarnate back on Earth. Well, when you're in the spirit realm, you have your material consciousness is not functioning. It's separated from the body, and you have no brain. And what's learned by your spiritual consciousness is being absorbed by the overall consciousness block, by the human spirit, which is absorbing your thoughts, which is absorbing the things that you learned, like wisdom, love, logic, purposefulness, a moderate attitude. All of these things you learn that have value are absorbed by your spiritual consciousness. And that will be your wisdom that's taken into the next life. Just like your spirit farm has a gemut that controls or organizes the thoughts and the feelings of this spiritual consciousness, the psyche controls and organizes the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. And from your psyche comes your positive mood, your negative mood, your current atmosphere of your attitude, what your attitude is. And it's interesting, too, because we have also a false ego, a false inner eye that kind of struggles against our inner eye, which is our true personality. Let me read a little bit here from the Way to Live book. It says, the inner self is the true personality, the real effective ego of the human being. However, this has nothing to do with the personality which is offered and shown outwardly, because in truth, there is no reflection of the inner self. That is no reflection of the inner self. So the personality that you show outward isn't really the reflection of the inner self. That which pushes outwardly from the human being is that which he or she would like to be and appear. But this highlights the consequences which, as a rule, cannot be brought into harmony with the true ego. Because its identity, the real I, is connected to creation. And therefore, in its form, it is also true to creation and directed at effectively being human in the real and true sense. But the human being disregards exactly that and clings at any price to a wrong and fateful self-image, which is patched together and is always makeshift. Through the disregarding of the truly inner identity, the human being compels himself into a false and unavoidably delusive self-image, which must always change its kind as a chameleon does with its colors. In order to newly adapt and change with every situation, so that the fiction of its changeable existence is at least kept alive for a short time, but connected with that is a grasping for the real inner self, for the actual and truthful ego, for the actual personality and the nature of the human being. Because in defiance of the false personality, false personality's cheating, outwardly the urge exists to allow the inner self to become effective. So we have this struggle between the real inner I and the false self. However, the human being denies himself / herself exactly that because outwardly she wants to be and appear more than the truthfully inner ego itself is. It, namely, is modest in connectedness with the creation. And it's interesting that modesty, there's a symbol in the creational teachings for modesty. And I chose that symbol as the image for this show. I don't know why I chose it, but I did. In demanding and, okay, while the image of the personality which is brought forth outwardly is demanding and immodest, so the outward personality is immodest, and it's loaded with all kinds of emotions, wishes and demands, and so forth. The outward personality thereby becomes a factor of incessant movement, of the grasping for external values, whereby the personality is delusive and conveys a false image of the self and I. Whoa. Very powerful stuff. Very worthy of a lot of reflection and meditation. Now, there's another German term called Empfinden. And Empfinden is referred to that block or factor which occupies an important position in the spiritual realm, in the Gemut. So if we talk about Empfinden, we're talking about the Gemut and the spiritual realm. And Empfinden is a spiritual process of the Gemut, and it doesn't belong to the physical body. So the Empfinden is a fine spiritual perception. Empfindung is called at times. The fine spiritual perception of the love of creation in the Goblet of Truth, which is one of Billy's books, chapter 25. Now, when we're talking about normal feelings, in terms of the German, we're talking the word Erfüllen, which is a verb, and this is the normal feeling you have when your fingers touch something. It's also picking up on vibration. It's a consciousness-based feeling. And this has to do with the swinging waves also that the Meyer material talks about. Another term that we talked about over the past couple of days is a Wesen. And a Wesen in the German, excuse my pronunciation, is an independently existing life form with its own personality and individuality. Remember, the creation is much more robotic. It doesn't have a personality. And that's another source of something to think about. You know, the creation has no personality, yet it radiates love, which we always associate love with a personality, which, you know, that's something that you have to try to wrap your mind around, because the creation is a Wesenheiten. And an analogy, it's like the water of the ocean or certain gases or stones. It doesn't really have much self-determination in its evolution. It evolves according to this step-by-step plan. The universe expands for like over 300 trillion years, and then it goes into a contraction phase, which is over 300 trillion years, and then it goes into a sleep state, and then there's a big bang again. And that's what's happening in our universe, which is a Wesenheiten. Now, we are human beings with a personality. And your cats and your dogs have personalities. Your horses have personalities. All the higher animals have a personality. But what's interesting, before the spirit form comes in, there is no personality. And we have an embryo that exists in an impulse-based small body that has no consciousness and no personality of its own until the 21st day, when the spirit form comes in and fully animates the embryo and the reincarnation process starts. Now, it's possible it could be a brand new spirit. In that point, there will not be any reincarnation. A couple other terms I'll cover quickly is Gewalt. Gewalt is the brutal execution of elemental force, far above all might and other force. Another important term is Ur. It's a German prefix signifying that which is most ancient. Asartung means to get out of control of the good human nature, and we talked about the swinging wave a little bit, Schwingung wave in the German. It's these waves that are built up electromagnetic and electric and magnetic fields. And at higher levels of evolution, human beings start to learn to be able to use these swinging waves and to do really bizarre and amazing things with them. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about dimensions, a term I don't really like because I don't think we're really in a position here on Earth to talk too much about dimensions yet. We don't know that much about them. And in physics, generally, we're talking about three dimensions of space and one of time. For example, latitude, which are the horizontal lines on the globe and which measure the number of degrees above the equator, and latitude are the vertical lines which measure the number of degrees slash distance from what's called the prime meridian, which is somewhere in England. So with those two, with the latitude and the longitude, we can get a point on a map. Now, if we add altitude, we get the third dimension of space. So if we have a latitude and a longitude and an altitude, we could find where an airliner might be flying. For example, if the airliner's flying over San Diego or some other city, we could identify its exact location at a point in time, which is the fourth dimension. So, and this is the most that we really understand on the Earth: latitude, longitude, altitude, and time. But the Billy Meyer teaching makes it very clear there are seven dimensions. And there are seven of these dimensions. And unfortunately, the word is sometimes used in many different ways. There are time-shifted dimensions. And the Pleiaren live in another space-time configuration. And one of the interesting things about that space-time configuration is there are a lot more planets with life in those other space-time configurations, particularly the one that the Pleiaren live in now. Now, in our space-time configuration, you may have to travel for 12 light years to find another planet that supports life. But in the Pleiaren space-time configuration, you can probably find another life-bearing planet in less than a light year. And that's one of the, I would say, possibly what you could say is one of the disadvantages that we have in our galaxy, our universe. Now, there are, well, let me leave it at that, and I won't complicate things anymore. But there are also human inner dimensions, and Semyase talks about these inner dimensions. So, And okay, let me read a little bit about what she says about this. That's why the terrestrial philosophers of old spoke about the human as a microcosm within a macrocosm, because everything that is included in the universe is included within the human. The inner dimensions of the human are endless. The image of creation, the spirit within him, the existence that is without dimension, it bears all dimensions within itself, and at the same time transcends all dimensions. The spirit is the wonder of all wonders, and all power emerges from it. A wonder means using the spirit force in perfection. So we have this tremendous spirit force that as we evolve, we will use that spirit force with a little more alacrity each time. Now, one of the things that we're struggling against right now is certain really negative historical trends. And one of the things we're looking at is the possible collapse of the U.S. in the year 2020. According to the Meyer material, we could fall into complete destruction in the year 2020. And Billy has talked about this again. And this is in Contact Report 544. Let me read a little bit of what Billy says here. When I consider that which you already confided to me during my great trip in 1975. So Ptah, when Billy was on the Great Mothership, if you remember us talking about that probably months ago, Ptah took a great trip on the Mothership in 1975. Semyase took him out to the planet Jupiter. She literally pulled her small beam ship into the hull of this gigantic craft that looks like a small planetoid. And one of the things that Ptah revealed to Billy is that as soon as 2020, the superpower USA could come to an end if nothing in the country changes for the better. Now, I think, this is just my opinion, and I could be wrong, I think things have changed for the better. And I do not think we're going to come to an end in 2020. But perhaps I'm wrong. We've seen some amazing things happen in the United States here in the very recent future. Let me read a little bit about what Ptah says here. He says, we will continue to give you information if you want it or if you think it could be necessary to make a prediction publicly, whereby it must be then be, however, a question of your own and only about something very special that no longer falls into the old scope of predictions. So, however, I'm going to jump down a little bit. It says, however, that which results if the UFSA should fall into ruin indicates that under certain circumstances, a dictatorship and naked Gewalt will arise. And remember, Gewalt is that brutal execution of force, which has already begun to emerge for years. The people of the United States are taken on an ever shorter leash, financially exploited, and everything from which profit can be made is withheld from them. For which primarily the rich and their followers, as well as those elite in the government, are responsible, who only represent their overflowing wealth, their monetary greed, and their absolute personal interests. Now, and I must admit that in the following sentences after this, it has some positive things to say about Obama. I'll throw this in the chat room. So that's a very interesting contact report. And also, I think that's the same one that talks about the dangers of our electronic media. Let me read what this says here. This continues. A small number of persons are really trying hard to form a good FIGU group in the USA. So there are also really good people over there who try very hard. If I thereby think solely, and now listen to this, solely of Michael Horn, who has already worked for so many years for the teaching and the mission. He and his work cannot be highly enough appraised. Indeed, not all human beings need to be working in this tireless scope, because a lesser commitment is already very valuable, and such a one can be achieved by many in America. However, these correspond only to a minority. But if they engage themselves, then much can be achieved through them. A small number of human beings can also achieve very much and bring many to others for that change for the better and good if they will make the effort. Constant dripping wears away the stone. Considered in this sense, everything unloving, evil, unpeaceful, and disharmonious, wrong and illiberal, as well as Gewalt, addiction to rule and addiction to might, and every hatred, every revenge, as well as every addiction to retaliation, will in some force, some form, in some way, be worn down to the ground, as well as everything dictatorial and everything which harms life and limb. This is a really good contact report. I recommend that you save that contact report. It's very important. 2029 is possibly the beginning of the golden era, which is relatively soon too. Some of us actually might even live to see that. And the golden era, what is the golden era? But the full value, and this is Contact Report 9, the full value of the era will only begin in February 3rd of 2029 at 11:20 Central European Time. The dramatically changing power of the new era has, however, has begun as far back as 1844. And since then, the powerful changes on the Earth race irresistibly forward. The new era already demands its tribute: religious insanity, the rapid development of all sciences, criminality getting out of hand, annihilating wars, signs of the time, which are incalculable. The first half period of the Aquarian Age lasted 93 years, from 1844 to 1937, during which the Earth retreated to the outermost radiation of the Pisces era. So the new golden age is within vision, within our view, which is a very, very interesting thing to think about. There's something called the absolute absolutum, which I also wanted to try to talk about a little bit. It's something that I could certainly learn more about myself. And Billy, in Contact Report 260, is talking about the absolute speed that anything in creation can go at. And it's 10 to the 7,000th power greater than the speed of light. So whatever 10 to the 7th is, times the speed of light. That's the top speed. And Billy goes on and says, I let this question be delivered to you by Florina. It is possible that this is only the creative maximum speed in our universe. While, for example, the absolute absolutum, so our universe resides in something called the absolute absolutum, where there are other universes, where maybe there are even greater speeds that are possible. So yes, we can go much faster than the speed of light. There's some interesting science that has to take place for that to be possible. Let me say a little bit about the Vatican. I'm jumping around here a little bit. And then we'll get back on track a little bit more. The Vatican, Billy asks a question to Patel. The first question refers to Adolf Hitler, i.e. the Nazi regime and the Vatican. You once told me that the so-called Holy See, the Vatican, the Pope, had somehow cooperated with Hitler. Can you tell me anything more about this? Patel says, there were two popes who got their hands dirty in the game with the Nazi regime. These were the popes Pius the 21st, I guess, or Pius the 11th and Pius the 12th, who held this office between 1939 to 1958. Both men have actively and consistently caused immense damage to the Jews through their machinations with Adolf Hitler and his henchmen. And both men completely and consciously accepted the murder of more than 4.5 million Jews and nearly 3 million criminals and people who were sick in the psyche. Both popes have criminally cooperated with Adolf Hitler and absolutely indifferently accepted the Holocaust quite deliberately. They have irresponsibly tolerated the persecution and the murder of the Jews and the so-called final solution, whereby both popes still undertook incredible steps to promote anti-Semitism. Thus, the Holy See, the Vatican, and the two popes were in common cause with Adolf Hitler and his regime. On June 30th, 1933, Pope Pius the 11th and his cardinals and bishops even gave a resolution in writing that the Holy See would not undertake anything against Hitler or the whole Nazi regime, whereby the text of the resolution stated that as long as Hitler does not declare war on the Holy See and the dignitaries in Germany, the Holy See and the Catholic dignitaries in Germany should refuse to condemn Hitler's party. And this is, as you know, Billy speaks very negatively of religions here on the earth. And we do have a lot of negative religion. Maybe the last unusual thing that I'll cover, and then I'll try to get back on track. I just find some of these topics quite interesting. And you may have heard of the topic of Agartha. And this is related to the Hyperboreans. Let me continue here. Billy says, of course, he's speaking of, he says, but in connection with the Hyperboreans, I still come to another question, namely about the legendary Agartha. Are you also oriented about this, and can you give me more details about it? Patel says, you surprise me again and again. How is the right name familiar to you? To my knowledge, the humanity of Earth still lives in error regarding the name of Agartha. And generally, it's still erroneously called Agharti. And Billy says, you forget that I was in India and in the Himalayas for a long time, and I also encountered the blue human beings. Patel said, that's why I should know that. Unfortunately, I cannot give you an exhaustive information in open form because certain things still have to remain confidential. However, this much can be said, that in the vicinity of Shigasti and Shampula, in the underground realm of Agartha, the capital in the center of distant descendants of extraterrestrials on the earth. Let me read that again. In the vicinity of Shigatse and Shampula, in the underground realm of Agartha, the capital and center of distant descendants of extraterrestrials on the earth. So These blue people are the distant descendants of extraterrestrials on the Earth, and they live in this underground realm called Egharta. And these two cities, I think these are two cities that Billy's saying where this underground realm is. I'll have to look up those two cities someday. And this is the center of the actual secrets that hold a gigantic power in themselves. This city is controlled by the race of the Sons of the Sun. I may have heard that term somewhere, but I can't remember where. But unfortunately, a tendency toward earthly worldly domination also prevails with this race. Just like with certain earthly religions and secret societies, and I may not explain anything else about it openly. And just as Patah is speaking these words, an android approaches and says something in a language that Billy cannot comprehend. Let me put this link in the chat room. That's Contact Report 39. And if you want to take a look at that, you can get also blown away by that. People, you know, wonder why we study the Meyer material so much. Well, that's the reason you get information like that. Okay, maybe I'll stop there for now. The Contact Report 39 is very interesting. If I remember correctly, it is, it occurred on December 3rd, 1975, and I think at least during part of this, I thought part of this may have been the time he was on the Great Mothership. Don't let me send you astray there in any sense. We have talked about the Thule Society a little bit. Again, I'm bouncing all over today. Bear with me. The Thule Society, you know, is one of the secret societies in Germany that was associated with the Giza intelligence, and it's talked about in Contact Report 60. Contact Report 60 took place on February 3rd, 1998. And the Thule Society, let me read to you what Semyase said about Adolf Hitler and the Thule Society. It may be different than what you've heard. You know, the Nazis were not good guys, but Adolf Hitler could have been, if he'd have stayed on his original path, a very good leader. Let me continue. Adolf Hitler was in many respects a genius. His knowledge ranged from a variety of areas of art and technology concerning a variety of sciences up to the use of the power of suggestion. In his internal form, he was an incarnate life form of very good values. Nevertheless, he wasn't a man of a highly developed spirit, but rather a man of intellect and reason who was destined to lead the overall earthly politics and economy, as well as all nations in a certain positive direction, in order to create a peaceful, united world and earthly humanity. For this purpose, he was educated and incarnated at this place. He was destined to give a new style to the earth through a positive and enforced nonviolence and to initiate new forms of development. This was very strictly controlled and monitored, but ultimately all efforts were in vain, and he was unable to fulfill his task in the way that it was provided. Through the leaders of the Thule Society at that time, as well as through their clairvoyant, Hannesson I, the Giza intelligence succeeded in taking possession of Adolf Hitler's being and in misusing him for their dark and malicious purposes without him being able to defend himself against them. For delusion-related lust for power flared up inside him. In addition to this endeavor, still innumerable forces were manipulated in the form of Earth people who succumbed to the Giza intelligences in their consciousness. So there was other people that had succumbed to the Giza intelligences. Remember I talked about those telenotic impulses. And they were in the close range of Hitler. whose influence he couldn't oppose. Thus, he soon compelled to the act against his own determinations and to do things that didn't correspond to his destiny. So this is very interesting stuff. And it continues. Patel says, and this was actually so, that is correct. The path that he took then, however, even with terror and war, was absolutely wrong and was neither in his destiny nor in any guidelines assigned to him, nor even in our interests. The reason for this wrongly chosen path developed quite early on, when he secretly came into contact with the fool society of that time, in consequence of which he also came into contact with Hermann Steinschneider, who I've talked about many times before, who was also belonged to the fool society and supported its unfair goals, and who called himself Erik Jan Hannesson the Clairvoyant. Steinschneider, i.e. Hannesson, moved in all circles of major Nazi figures, among them whom he had many clients, so even also Adolf Hitler, who became enslaved by him, and indeed even before he seized the leadership for himself. You know, this is profound information. Steinschneider slash Hannesson emerged as a middleman between the Thule Society and Hitler, and so to speak directed Adolf Hitler according to the Thule Society's leader's will. So during World War II, the Nazis were very much controlled by this Thule Society, which I didn't know they had that much control. The efforts of the leaders at that time of the Thule Society went out for the acquisition of world domination. Consequently, already very early on, they allowed Steinschneider to influence and shape Hitler in this direction. By what means this then began, in accordance with their will, terror and murder, to trigger World War II in the end. And at the same time, Steinschneider became even more powerful in the course of time with respect to his domination over Adolf Hitler. And he didn't appeal to various people who were Hitler's, who were against Hitler. The consequences of this was that they allowed Steinschneider to be murdered in 1933. So in 1933, Steinschneider was murdered. So by then, Hitler was already, too far down the wrong path, I guess, and couldn't recover. So anyway, some fascinating tidbits about Hitler. We talked about the blue race. And we'll probably run out of time as I talk about Eckhart. And I've just slammed through a whole bunch of different topics tonight. Thanks, Eve and Tobias, for the compliments about tonight's show. We've covered a lot of material. My head is spinning. There is a planet called Eckhart. That was destroyed. Planet Eckhart belonged to the Federation of the Pleiar. And let me read what Patas said about them, because we're much on a similar path here on the Earth. Patas says, what you say corresponds to that which corresponds to the facts. The population of planet Eckhart belonged to our Federation, as well as also the population of the worlds of Proxima Centauri and others from there and other local regions of space around there, from which several of them come to the Earth. However, all of these worlds belong in our space-time construction. Consequently, they also possess several of our technologies. Like, for example, that technology with which they're able to bridge the time barrier and come into your space-time construction. The population of Eckhart, however, no more exists since the year 2007, because in the only 32 years from 1975 to 2007, their total population increased to 34 billion. When through their stupidity, like also like also is apparent with the terrestrial population, nature and climate were completely destroyed. So between 1975 and 2007, this planet, Akkart, its population went up to 34 billion, and they destroyed their atmosphere, basically. When in the end, an oxygen collapse and an atmosphere collapse occurred. So that is the danger of overpopulation. And as a result, all life was wiped out on this planet. Billy says, however, you still have advised and helped them, as you said at that time. Pata says, unfortunately, our advice was just disregarded and not followed, as well as our help was declined. Only then, when there was nothing more to give, the humans came to think things over, but then it was already too late. And as a result, we could just save as many humans as possible. Unfortunately, only 116 million and resettle them on other worlds. Billy says, catastrophic. On the Earth, can it similarly be threatened? Because through all the nature catastrophes, the sicknesses, the epidemics, and through the global carrying off of exotic wildlife and exotic plants, life in the living area of man and animals and of all wildlife, the oxygen content and the atmosphere of Earth, as well as the achievements of terrestrial humanity, steadily more and more have caused destruction. And Patel says, and we're running out of time here, says, Patel says, Earth humans, so I'm able to say, are pathologically autocratic and incorrigible, which is why they must first suffer enormous damage before they see reason and open up their eyes and senses to warnings. And if they do not do this, then destruction one day will be their fate. So anyway, if we don't wake up, we're headed in the same position as this other planet called Akkart. And I've managed to end two shows on the subject of overpopulation, not something I planned, which is very interesting. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. We've been talking about the Billy Meyer case, talking about the contact reports. We discussed some items in the book called The Way to Live, other items in the Might Have Thoughts, and I do have some guests lined up. Some of them are dropping like flies, but we do have some guests lined up for the coming week. And anyway, have a great evening, and it was nice chatting with you. Bye-bye.